Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 599, Awakening the Nightmare, recorded live on October 10th, 2017. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are back. And we have both finally finished Awakening the Nightmare campaign. Woohoo!
Yay!
And it only took us a couple weeks since it came out, but we actually completed it. And I know for me, it was not easy, even though I played on easy on certain parts of it. Don't know about you, Godzilla, but...
Oh, I played it on easy.
Yeah.
I wanted to enjoy the story first.
Yeah, I wanted to as well, except there were a couple parts in the story I'm like, It was the archive mission that really threw me for a loop. I lost twice before I beat it.
I didn't lose any missions.
Yeah, I failed.
Archive is definitely a challenging one. You don't fight the Flood like you do... anything else?
No, it's very different. I mean, which is good. It's a different experience for the game and for Halo in general. But at the same time, it's just like my tactics that I'm used to don't exactly work. And I'm a horrible RTS player to begin with. So that makes it doubly complicated. But at least we finished it.
Yeah, I'm not exactly an RTS player either. But yeah, I was able to figure things out. So. It's amazing how creative you get when you have limited resources.
Yes.
And that's one thing about this campaign that it is. There, you have limited resources. It's not until, the second to the last mission, or no, it's not even till the last mission, you can build a full-on base with power income and supply income. Throughout the rest of the campaign, you are limited to what you can do. I think on the first three, about all you can build is infantry units.
Yeah, you couldn't build any air units and a fair chunk of the vehicle units. You're right. Stuck with maybe half of what you could build at full capacity, and then I think for the flying units for the first two, all you could build was engineers.
And that definitely hampers your playstyle.
A little bit. Just a little bit. I think one of the things for me was just how, and of course, probably going to say this multiple times, not being a good RTS player, just the difference in how you had to approach the Flood. And the first mission wasn't really that bad. You were just fighting Sentinels. And that wasn't too difficult to get a hold of. But once the Flood was playing the part, it's like, okay, tactics are a little bit different, especially since they can like convert units and then attack you with them. And those popcorn Flood, they are so annoying.
Oh, and I have never seen so many of those at one time.
No, I haven't either.
I mean, it is not uncommon to have hundreds of them on the screen at a time. At least it feels like hundreds.
Yeah. The first time I saw that many Flood on the screen, I'm like, whoa, hello, hello. And whenever I was doing Terminus Firefight for the demo builds, I didn't really remember seeing that much either. Granted, it was a lot, but it wasn't nearly this much to have just waves of popcorn Flood just swarming you, the infection forms.
And I have to admit those, the big Flood, what are they called?
Abominations.
Yeah. Those things are a pain in the butt. They tear through your units in a heartbeat. When they do that slam, it takes full health units to nothing.
And I hadn't played anything else with Abomination as far as multiplayer or campaign until going through Awakening of the Nightmare. And when I had been playing Terminus Firefight, I'm like, okay, of course... enemies are nerfed and the supply chain is buffed to where it's a fun experience on the floor and whatnot. So I'm like, okay, this will probably boil down to maybe an easy or a normal equivalent in difficulty when we get the DLC. It seemed a little more difficult to me, and I was not ready for that. Although, to be fair, the first time you come across an abomination, or maybe it's the second time. Can't remember if the archive was the second time you... I think it may... Yeah,
it's the second time you come across. But
you have so few units that... And I guess, forewarning, spoilers if you're listening to this podcast, because we're going to be talking about the whole campaign for the DLC. You have been warned. The abomination that you get to just runs around and destroys you, and if you only have the units that you start out with, if you're trying to go for that bonus objective, you only have 7 squads, and if you have used the teleporters, which I didn't know you could get multiple units per teleporter.
I think you can't until you get to the last area.
Oh, so maybe it is that way. Okay.
Because every time I'd go back to a teleporter, it was deactivated.
See, I thought the same thing too. So, okay, I wasn't too messed up. But you could pull in basically 2 squads of either jump pack or elite specialists, or you could pull in, for that first time, the elite ranger and get the little cloaking ability to go do the scouting at the very beginning. But once you get to that abomination, you're screwed. Bobby actually, when he got on the chat when I was streaming yesterday, and I kind of had been thinking about maybe just sending one unit to run past the abomination into the laser grid, but he gave me the idea of use the ranger elite to use the cloaking ability to run past. So I did. And then I just slashed away at the little resource canisters at the end there until my cloaking went off. And then the abomination started chasing me, and then I just ran the ranger through the elite, through the laser grid, and then the abomination died. Then I brought all the rest of my guys with me.
That's a good idea.
So, thanks, Bobby, for the tip. And I will be relying on you, I'm sure, for legendary backpack. Because I'll need it. D2 will probably need it, too. But it was... overall, I think the DLC was fun. I do think having it... What was it? $20 for the DLC?
Something like that, yeah.
For... only 5 missions and as few cutscenes as there were from Blur, maybe should have dropped $5 off of that DLC. I don't think it was worth the full 20.
You know, me personally, yeah, we didn't get a lot of Blur cutscenes, but I didn't really expect to for $20. You know, me, I don't feel like I wasted my money.
I don't either. I think it would have been nice to see a little more content for some of the other people that were like, why wasn't this included in Season Pass?
True. But, I mean, you do get 5 campaign missions, which are challenging, especially once you get up into the higher difficulties. There is a good story there. It's fun to see a cocky brute as a character. And, you know, you kind of want to just say, here's your sign.
Yeah, the I love one that thing, last cutscene though between Atriox and Vordis. Though
I was half expected him to just knock him on upside the head or something.
Yeah, I was.
You know, I wasn't expecting him just to, you know, go, don't do that again. Clean up your mess. I mean, that just didn't seem like Atriox.
Well, he's probably being smart and like, I can't spare more men because of how many we've lost to the Flood and to the humans already, so...
Well, you know, I understand that, but, you know, a smack across the face or something.
Yeah, I was with you. I was expecting, like, pulling out that gravity mace and kind of throw, like, tossing them across the chasm or something and be like, you do it again and it's gonna hurt a lot worse. It makes sense, though. Especially with how much of a strategist Atriox is and he's portrayed to be.
But when you have... He wasn't exactly on Atreus's good side to begin with.
No, you got that sense from the very beginning of the campaign. It's like you knew something was going to go wrong.
And even Atriox's patience will only go so far.
You can't really mess up too many times for a leader like Atriox before he decides to...
cut his losses.
Yeah. The Flood
has changed. Oh, my Lord. Yeah, the Flood. It is definitely a different fight than everybody's used to.
It makes me wonder how, if we see it in Halo 6, those different flood forms come into play and how to combat them in a first-person shooter type perspective. Because there's a few of those units that are very unique to fight.
Yes. But, you know, with a group. And, you know, that's how those enemies are key to fight, is to fight against a group. So their tactics in a shooter would probably change a little bit. You know, after playing Awakening the Nightmare, it wants me to go, you know, I want to go take a break and play Library on Legendary.
I know I can beat Library on Legendary, though, because I'm more of a first-person shooter than I am an RTS player.
Without doing any shortcuts.
I've done it before.
Oh, I have too. That's how I beat it, was without shortcuts. The first time. It was a real grind.
Whenever I play through it, though, I play with shortcuts, though. If I'm doing speedruns or just trying to do a completion, like for MCC or something, I'll just use shortcuts as much as I can just to get it done. Bobby in the Twitch chat is like, you're talking about the Sunset Overdrive ripoff? I mean, Abominations?
Well, I wouldn't know about that because I haven't played Sunset Overdrive.
I just know from the videos that were at E3 and a couple other advertisements from Xbox that the Abominations looked like the pulsating orange things from Sunset Overdrive.
I'll have to look that up then.
Yeah, just look up the E3 announcement or the E3 trailer from 2015, I think. 2014, 2015. And you'll see it in there. One of the things I most liked about the campaign was, I think the primary focus on this was just having the flood back and having a little more lore behind it. Although it was really something that really kind of felt off. And someone actually mentioned this about Hidden Experience making kind of a big deal over the lore behind the grave mines and key mines kind of being altered a little bit, but how they kind of played on that last boss battle of being a grave mine in development and not fully there yet, and then how you kind of fight it and whatnot. I mean, I understand the mechanics of RTS needing to fight certain things, but is it just me or did that feel a little off? A little weird? Just from a lore perspective, the grave mine concept.
Well, I mean, the big thing that Hidden Xperia had was they referred to it as a key mine. And in the past, a key mine has been a planet-sized grave mine. And, you know, that's where the big debate is. You know, this is not a planet-sized group of flood.
Right. But I don't think And I mean, I haven't watched this video yet. I plan to, but isn't one of the things, because in the dialogue that I heard, and maybe I just didn't hear it right, it didn't seem like they were necessarily calling it specifically a key mine, but they were talking about them in context.
Yeah, I didn't actually catch the reference to key mine in there, and I'm not exactly sure it was that visible. I'll have to play through it again to actually catch the reference.
It was just a dialogue reference. It wasn't a visible. Yeah.
You know, that's what Hidden Xperia was talking about, is the fact that they kind of redcon what a key mine was. And they changed it to be kind of an umbrella type statement to include key mines, grave mines, and proto grave mines. You know, basically any type of grave mine as a group. But then they turn around and say that the key mine in its original sense still exists.
Like an original part of it?
Well, no, in its original form. See, up until Halo Wars 2, a key mine was basically once the flood had consumed an entire planet. The entire planet became the key mine. It right. became that central intelligence to coordinate flood.
So basically you have a flood spore, then you have an infection form, then you have a fight or a combat form.
The
then
key mine is what controls grave mines.
Right. So it's like Grave Mine, then Proto-Grave Mine, then Key Mine.
You know, the previous tense, in the previous description, the Key Mine would be the five-star general telling everybody else what to do. It's, and now they've changed the definition to where it still encompasses that, but they also bunch in all the other grave mines, proto-grave mines, pre-proto-grave mines, all those into that same term. And that's where the big debate is.
I'd have to listen to the dialogue of that mission. And unless it's written somewhere, like maybe in the Phoenix logs or something, I wouldn't take dialogue specifically. Well,
I think that's where the reference is. Because I haven't read those logs yet. And Graham has even put a post up on Waypoint clarifying it.
Interesting.
It's a real head burner. The whole grave, it's a mind. It's big. Kill it quickly. But as far as a fight, it was an interesting fight. I did find out that your best bet when fighting it is air, because nothing around it will attack air except for one of the units, and you just need some anti-air to take care of that.
Yeah, that air flood unit, which is really weird. That was a really weird unit.
You know, on the harder difficulties, yeah, I don't know how well it's going to work. Eric Ibu saying the air infectors are extremely powerful, so maybe, you know, more anti-air.
Possibly, yeah. I think the other thing with those air units is just, I don't know, I wasn't able to really, it didn't seem like they were easily taken out, like they had a high defense stat.
No, if you have an anti-air unit, they go down relatively quick. You know, me, I was playing with a mix of my starting units. I brought in Banshees, Blisterbacks, I also brought in Grunts, Brutes, and the Brute cannon launcher ones. So I had a fairly wide mix of units. Basically what I'd do is I'd bring in a blaster back and park it around the grave mine by one of the bases you take over. And it would help, you know, defend my ground units from a distance. The one thing I do wish they would fix is, and Bobby's saying this in the chat as well, the air units get distracted really easy. I mean, you have to keep the cursor on the target and keep tapping X to keep them focused on the target, or they'll just start shooting whatever runs around on the ground underneath them.
The air units?
Yeah. The Banshees.
Hmm.
Is what I was using. I mean, you've got to keep telling them to attack the grave mine, because if you don't, they'll just start attacking whatever's around it. They won't attack the grave mine. Or you'll only have one or two that attack the grave mine.
But I wonder if that's a bug.
If you keep targeting it, they will attack it. And the retriever sentinel pretty much just freaking ignores the thing.
Okay.
I literally did more damage with my Banshees than I did with that stupid sentinel. They just flew off to the other side of the map and just, I'm going to go over here.
That's funny.
I mean, I actually had to attack the grave mine with, I was using my, what was it? The beam from the ship. I can't even think what the name of it is.
Like the cleansing beam type thing. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The cleansing beam thing. Ring of fire. Thanks, Bobby.
But yeah, I couldn't get the retriever sentinel to do anything. You know, once it did its initial attack, I just couldn't, you know, it was a useless unit.
So I found, at least for me, I had to keep clicking on it and then keep, once it charged up its, I guess, main attack or whatever, then I could have it attack the grave mind. So there was a little duration after that initial attack where it'd be like floating around, and then after the attack got charged up, then you could actually attack the grave mind. And I think for me, I used its super powerful attack 3 times to take out the grave mind. In addition to all the peppering that I did with all the other units I had.
Yeah, I used I just had all my units attack the thing, and I used the excavation beam or whatever it was. And it only took one round of that, and it was dead.
Rain of fire, one of the two.
Yeah, rain of fire. Thanks, Bobby.
Rain of fire.
I found that at least on easy, one attack of that would destroy all the little pods in the top and then make it retreat.
Talking about little pods, those flood pods that were everywhere on the last three missions, those things got kind of annoying. Could you just walk over, walk by one, and then
they'd explode.
Yeah, then you lose like a quarter health. Unless you're in a big group, in which case maybe it's not as bad. But there are a few times where I'm like, wait, I just lost two units from just popping one of those suckers. Those were a little annoying. I mean, they were an interesting little challenge, but there were times where just like, really? I had a group of units walking down the path, and one of the units was just close enough to it where I just made it pop, and it's like, oh, well, I've lost the health on pretty much that whole squad. Oops.
That's why I was running engineers.
Whenever I had a chance, I used engineers all over the place. So the cutscenes for the first two, I think were really cool. The last one, the I guess there were only three cutscenes, weren't there? Wow. The first two were nice just from a kind of helping set up some of the camaraderie or the relationships between some of the different characters. And then you had Plavium and Vordis. Then the second cutscene, just with the flood, was eerie as all get out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's flood, and I think that's probably...
Oh, they did a good job on the flood.
Oh, yes, they did. And just that low rumbling of the flood is awaking. And then the last cutscene where Aatrox just puts up his hand and grabs the infection form and pops it.
And it oozes. You know, that sound we've been listening to for the last 10 years. Or 15 years. Yeah, you got a visual representation of it.
Yeah, I don't think we've had flood quite this detailed.
No, we have not.
Looking at that last cutscene too, and you really didn't get the appreciation for how messy flood is, I think, until these cutscenes with how soupy the area was afterwards.
I love how they got flood guts just dripping off their helmets and their faceplates.
The first thing that's going through my mind is like, why are you taking off your masks? There's probably flood spores all in the air that you could easily get infected by, right?
Well, I think the flood spores are, they have, if I forget how this works, but I think the flood spores have to, they basically work on the small stuff. And then those pods, you know, little popcorn flood,
those are what forms
infect larger items.
Okay.
But even still, why would you take it off? You got the stuff running down your face.
I know. And just all the goop, it was... I hadn't seen anything that graphic of the flood before. Eric Cuban makes a good point, though. We see Aatrox crush a Spartan helmet and an infection form with his bare hand.
But the infection form is not really a challenge because, you know, a human can step on one and pop it.
Right. But it's interesting to connect those two
but actions it is,
together.
It is interesting that they chose that particular motion for the cutscene.
Yes. I agree. We've discussed pretty much a lot of the stuff that we liked about the campaign. And I guess to sum up, Vordis gets into High Charity, cuts out the quarantine shield a little bit, wakes the flood, has to do damage control on the flood, and they reactivate the defenses of the Ark to help contain the flood. And now Vordis is charged with making sure that everything gets all tidied up and that there's no more flood on the loose.
Really got a problem with is magically the Sentinels are fighting with them. It just, you know, to me, it would seem that the Sentinels would attack any threat. But I guess that's just me.
Yeah, but at the same time, we've seen other parts in the Halo games where the Sentinels are working with Covenant or against humanity and then with humanity.
When they're under the control of a monitor.
Fair point. I mean, you do see...
But, I mean, it could just boil down to they were going after the greater threat.
Yeah, and you did see that it was the Banished that reactivated them to help contain the Flood. So there's probably a little bit of semblance of, okay, we recognize that you activated us to help address the threat, and you're attacking the threat as well, so let's mutually combine our forces to help manage it, at least for now. And they should have been creatures that were cataloged by the librarian, so there may be some kind of protocol there to help protect the Banished races from the Flood. So there could be that aspect as well.
Well, Bobby actually brings up a pretty good point. Why didn't the Sentinels destroy High Charity? Why did they encapsulate it in the Hard Light Shield instead of destroying it? It's an interesting question.
That's a very good question. I don't know. Maybe easier to contain? Just contain it there?
I mean, part of it could be the fact that the monitor is dead, so they don't have any higher instruction. And their main purpose is to contain the Flood. So
there could be a number of different reasons why.
But still.
It might be in the Phoenix log. I haven't read them all.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, High Charity was still there when the monitor was there, so who knows?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
I think we're just kind of lost in the dark on that one for now. Bobby does bring up a good point. Anything else you want to mention about the campaign before we move on to some new stuff?
No, I think that pretty much covers it for me.
Out of the other rest of the campaign stuff from Halo Wars 2 and Halo Wars, I have to say that this was a pretty good change on things, especially with the Flood, how to combat them. And it was cool seeing the Flood back in the Halo universe. I hope we get to see a little bit of a reintroduction into the first-person shooter line of games. Maybe we'll see that with Halo 6 or maybe another Halo down the road. But I do think there are some aspects of the gameplay that for me personally just didn't jive well. But then again, a pretty bad RTS player, so I'm not the one to go on any kind of standard of gameplay. But there were just a few different aspects of it, like how limited the units were on the first two missions seem a little ridiculous, because I mean you're going in as like you should have that forces, and you know what forces you're taking in, at least with that first mission behind you, to gather resources from High Charity. So that seemed a little out of place for me.
Well, actually I think it made actually with the way they took the story, I think it actually made sense. And it also helped build some suspense for the campaign. But
I guess that's true, yeah.
He's going in. He does something that he's been explicitly told not to, which is go inside the shield, or inside High Charity. And he's trying to cover up his mess before Atriox figures it out, and trying to contain the Flood before it gets to the stage that it is. So... you know, I can understand why, you know, in the first couple of missions, you're limited on units. Plus, it would take, I mean, in all reality, it would take time for those units, the reinforcements, to get there. So it's an interesting mechanic for the campaign.
That's true. And there is the gameplay aspect that needs to be accounted for as well. And now I'm thinking about it, if you were to start off just Halo Wars 2 that way, as well, you wouldn't start off with having all units available to you.
Right. You know, they bring you in over the first couple of missions, they introduce you to all the units. And, you know, that's what each campaign level is designed to cope with, is the units that are available. As you get further into the campaign, they bring more and more units up available because they've designed the encounters to defend and attack those against those units.
Sure.
But, you know, the first couple of levels of panic mode definitely worked for the story.
I didn't get the sense of panic mode for the first two missions.
I meant me.
Oh.
How the heck am I going to do this with these guys?
Gotcha.
I will have to admit they did give you ample turrets.
Yes, they did. And ample resources, too.
Well, the drill level resources could be a challenge on higher difficulties. You know, granted, I didn't have to use that much power to be able to defend my base and control the flood infestations. But to get all three drills running, I still had to consume 2/3 of the little power crystals.
I had to almost consume them all.
So that did, well, I used my power very miserly. I only really used it for the drill. I didn't upgrade anything. I didn't build anything that required power. I only built infantry units out of the main base, and they just require resources. So, you know, because I wanted to get the power up as quickly as possible to get the drills active as fast as possible. So, you know, just to get the drills up and running, you're looking at collecting at least 2/3 of those crystals.
Gotta go explore a little bit. That was a fun little mission, though. I kind of like that one. Granted, when I played it, I took a long time because I was upgrading stuff and I was getting more units so I could go around and collect more crystals and wipe out all the little flood bases. But that mission was kind of fun. It was a nice different take on resource gathering.
Yeah, where you actually had to gather the resources. They weren't just automatically deposited in your base.
There's quite a few of that in this campaign, though. All the different resource pods that you would go get, and the few bonus objectives of actually going and getting them all. It was a little bit different in how you actually used resources and gathered resources in this game. I think the only one that was kind of similar to what we've seen in the past was the last mission. But even then, you had resource pods still that you would go and get additional resources from.
Yeah, you know, in the last mission, I think they were a little over-generous with the power laying around the map.
I bet for Legendary, it's kind of needed.
Possibly. But also on Legendary, you're not going to be exploring the map as much either.
True. I think there is, with the resources that are around, though, it almost kind of behooves you to at least take some units to go get those resources if you can get there. At least for me, maybe. I don't know. But it was a fun DLC. I think for me, it was worth $20 just because of wanting to play Halo and liking Halo. But I think it could have been, I don't know, it's like kind of right on the cusp there, because the story itself is kind of short. If you put together just like the three cutscenes that were there and a little bit of story that you get inside the gameplay, it does seem a little short to me.
No. Operation Spearbreaker, the story was short.
Well, that was part of the season pass.
I know.
And I still haven't played that yet either.
That story's short. This one, I think it was a fair length for what we paid.
Well, even the first... And I have to go back and play Halo Wars, the original, again, because I felt like there was a lot more story in Halo Wars 1 than there was in the just standalone campaign of Halo Wars 2.
Well, yes and no. There's more story in Halo Wars because they're introducing all these new characters. I mean, literally, every character they're introducing is brand new. Where in Halo Wars 2, the only real characters they have to introduce are the banished characters. Because we already know pretty much about the Spirit of Fire. On the UNSC side, the only real characters they need to introduce are the Spartans and Isabel. So, you know, that's a pretty short list.
I don't think it's just character development, though. I think it's with the play spaces as well.
Well, I was actually very impressed with Halo Wars 2 as far as the campaign and the story told through the campaign. There are parts of it that seem oversimplified.
Yes.
But it wasn't so off-putting that it didn't make me, it didn't make me want to stop playing. It still made me want to hear the rest of the story. And in, throughout Halo Wars, pretty much for the first half of the game, they're still introducing and kind of giving you a little bit of backstory on the crew of, Forgot what the name of the ship is. Yeah, Spirit of Fire. And you're still kind of getting to know them. And then by the second half of the campaign, you feel like you really know them, and you're focusing more on what they're doing, what the objective is, not what they're doing. Is Halo Wars 2 on the same level as Halo Wars? Probably not as far as story, but it's still a good story. It was told well. You can always find fault in it, but it was worth the money for the story. I haven't gotten into the multiplayer yet, or Firefight, or Blitz, or any of that. So, I'm still goofing around with campaign. And unfortunately, it's due to lack of time that I haven't completed campaign yet. But completed it as far as legendary and all that. But I do enjoy playing it when I play it. Even the repeat of the levels, I still enjoy the story.
Maybe that's part of it. Maybe I just don't have the free time now to appreciate it like I did back for Halo Wars.
Well, that's one reason I like to go through games on easy or normal, so I can really pay attention to the story, not so much the game mechanics. A lot of people, they crank it up on legendary difficulty and play through it. Oh, okay, that's fine. Whatever. I'm glad you did that. But, me, I want to kind of kick back, enjoy the story first, and then go in and beat it on legendary later. And also, it kind of helps me develop my legendary strategy as well. So I kind of know what I'm going to do before I get to that level on legendary. Find out what I have to do to complete the level and figure, what the most efficient way to do that is.
I don't know. I guess just for me, it hasn't invoked in me the desire to go through and re-experience the campaign right after I was done. Where like Halo Wars 1 and Halo Reach were like that. It's like, this was fun. I want to play this again. I want to go and find all those nitty-gritty bits of lore. And I guess for me, it didn't click as well this time around.
No,
which is fine.
Everybody's life changes.
I don't think we have any more DLC though for Halo Wars 2. I think this is it.
Well, not unless they surprise us with something else.
I mean, there might be like multiplayer fixes and maybe a couple more multiplayer maps down the road. But as far as
I'm sure there'll still be balancing updates and things like that.
But we don't know what's going down from here as far as new DLC. Well, let's jump into some news then, shall we?
Sure.
So today, Halo posted that they are bringing the HCS into 2018 with the third annual Halo World Championship. They're going to be sharing more details of that next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 4 p.m. Pacific on their Mixer and Twitch channels. So if you're interested in the competitive scene and want to know what 2018 will bring with the Halo Championship Series and the World Championship, then make sure you do not miss out on the stream. I'll be tuning into it, hopefully, and we'll be talking about it on the show next week. There's also going to be an AMA on the Halo subreddit right afterwards at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, which is 9 p.m., which is when we'll actually be recording. So hop on over there to the Halo subreddit if you're interested in asking Tashi and the competitive team questions, and they will be in there to answer them. For the latest community update, there is a couple of things, not too much for this week. They have a little post that references some Halloween costume stuff that you can get, the Halo gear kind of promotion as we start into the consumerist time of year with Halloween and the holidays, all that fun stuff. So they have a list of wearable Halo gear that you can get from the faceplate, or like the Halo face helmet stuff, child and adult sizes, the Master Chief sunglasses, the caps, the costumes, the Boomco weapons, the grenade plushie, jackets, all that kind of stuff. There's also a little note in here about the Warzone 12-player fire teams. So we mentioned this back, I think, a couple months ago when they were discussing some of the changes that they were going to make to the normal Warzone playlist to open that up to 12 parties again. Had to do with the rec level balancing and making that kind of grow a little bit. They're looking at also making sure that parties of 12 match up with parties of 12, so some of the matching times will still be a little slow, but they have a feeling that will make sure that the game is a lot more fun and engaging. They said, keep in mind that if it turns out that the trial that they're going to be working on is unsuccessful because larger team can't find matches, they're not going to relax the matchmaking constraints, and they'll reevaluate and probably just keep it as the 6-player fire teams to go into Warzone. It's something that they're looking to bring out here pretty soon, as far as the little tweaks that they want to try with the Warzone 12-player fire teams. So that's a good thing. Hopefully that's something that we can participate in the Frag and Fridays, and we can get together on weekends or whatever and play that as well. What do you think, GT? Is it something you would jump back into if they kind of fix the 12-player party Warzone balancing? I'd at least give it a try.
Me personally, I've pretty much become disenchanted with the whole Warzone thing. Don't get me wrong, it's fun to jump in a game every once in a while, but it's not something I'd do on a regular occasion. I mean, if a group of us got together and they were a 12-person team, the only problem is we'll be matching up against 12-person teams that probably do nothing but play Warzone.
Yeah, with how small the player pool could be.
So our chances of winning dramatically go down. And as long as the team we're playing is courteous about it and just beats us and gets it over with, that's fine. But if they decide they want to farm kills, then that gets really annoying.
Very true. At least with the balance that they described previously, it sounds like it won't be as much of a slaughter. And there's at least some chance for teams that may be getting overpowered to at least come back and have a fighting chance and at least put up a fight and make it a little more fun. So I am looking forward to that. And there's some people from the 405th and Anvil Station that are like, well, we want to play Warzone with you sometimes. It's just, it would be a good excuse to kind of at least get in and try it with some other people. A couple other smaller things on the horizon. We have DreamHack Denver happening next weekend, the weekend of the 20th. And thanks to contributions from RecPack crowdfunding, they increased the prize pool from $100,000 to $200,000. I'm surprised people are still paying for RecPacks, to be perfectly honest.
You never know. Gotta get them recs.
Spectator tickets are on sale now, as well as player registration. You can also participate in a $5,000 free-for-all competition if you're there. And as always, if you attend Halo's Championship Series, then you can get the custom Halo Championship Series nameplate for Halo 5, and it's nice animated and has a little crowd image on the bottom. So you can get that for your in-game nameplate for Halo 5 Guardians. Next thing is, and this is actually past, they did another Halo 3 Classic Throwback Community Play Date, which was yesterday, giving out some more Ice Unicorn weapon skins in Halo 5. The adult coloring book comes out tomorrow, as of this recording, which will be October 11th. I think I pre-ordered that. Hope I did. If not, you can find that over on Amazon. I think it was, something in the teens?
Something like that. I don't actually remember.
$14.99. So on Amazon, it says October 24th. They put that one here? That's weird. That Amazon has it releasing on October 24th, and they have it releasing October 11th.
Maybe there was a delay in shipments.
That might be a tweet I'm going to put out to Halo right now. But you can go to podtacular.com/coloringbook, which will take you to Amazon straight to the item to order it. It's $14.99 for pre-order right now. I guess by the time the podcast comes around, it'll either be out or it won't be out. Next little thing on the list is a couple of books that we have coming down the road. Halo Warfleet is now available in the UK. It was out last month for the people in the US, but now is out in the UK. And also up for pre-order is the latest Matt Forbeck book, Legacy of Onyx, is now available for pre-order on Amazon. Paperback is at a discounted $9.78 from $16 retail, and then the Kindle version is $11.99. That is now available for pre-order at Amazon as well.
I'll just get my audiobook.
Yeah, fair enough. Twitch had a poll for its followers on Twitter to vote for the greatest video game music of all time. And thanks to some clever tweeting by Sketch and Unishek and probably some other community people over there, Halo won the vote. The vote was between Halo, Legend of Zelda, Final Fantasy, and Doom, and out of 76,134 votes, Halo took it with 41% of the votes, followed by Legend of Zelda with 30%.
Yeah, I figured Legend of Zelda would be right there.
It's funny, because when I first saw the tweet, Legend of Zelda was up on the Halo series, I think, like 57% to Halo's 29 or something like that. And Halo was in second place at the time, but that was when Halo put out a tweet, and their tweet was, "You know the music, time to dance," or something like that.
Yeah, I saw that.
I think that's when the Halo community went crazy and started voting. Because I doubt Nintendo would have put a tweet out to say, "Hey, vote for Legend of Zelda." Good job, social media, for Halo. You did a good job.
They're too busy launching their new console, or their new retro console.
The SNES. And restocking, too, apparently. The last thing on the little tidbits is the experience that was at New York Comic Con this past weekend. They had an augmented reality Spartan experience that was done by Mega Constructs at New York Comic Con. So if you saw some of the pictures and videos out there, it was basically an AR experience where you could stand in front of a camera and then you could basically be animated in a Megablocks figure. And I think there are multiple different figures you could animate as. So you would just stand there and it would trace your movements of your body and then kind of animate you. I don't know if they had any like pictures that you could get of yourself in them or if you could have a little video render or whatever, but that was an experience that was available at New York Comic Con this year. Which, that's unfortunately, I did not go. Yeah. Sadly, I didn't get to go. But I have other things to attend to, aka wedding stuff, because my mom was in town this weekend. But it was really nice to see her.
Yeah, it's always good to see the parents.
Yeah. And the parents met for the first time, which is good. And everything went well this weekend. Except for a couple of hiccups. My fiance got sick at the Renaissance Fair.
Ooh, that's not good.
Yeah, it was a gyro, something in there that cut her. Not feeling.
Yeah, too that'll
great.
Do it.
Yeah, but everything else went well. I know Vin Warrior was there at New York Comic Con. For those who don't know, he's one of the writers over here. You've seen a lot of his work on the Podtacular website, as far as blog posts and posting the community update summaries and whatnot. And he's had a few different editorials as well. One of the things that I hope to get to do at some point is meet him in person as well. And yeah, that's it for the bulletin. There's some community spotlight stuff, obviously, as far as screenshots, montages, some artwork, for a community update. This one was a little small this week, but kind of makes sense with some of the other stuff that's going on with DreamHack Denver coming up next week and then New York Comic Con out there as well. But that's the news for now. For a Spartan Company update, we still have 5 slots, so if you're interested in helping us get the full Achilles armor and get that last helmet, then we can definitely use your help. We are still at 10 of 31 of the requirements completed. The one that we are the closest on finishing is from the top rope, which is kill an enemy Spartan with a ground pound. We have 4,094 out of 4,900 of those left, so we have another 806 to go for ground pound kills. And then the furthest away, and I forget if this was swapped with the other one or not before. I don't think last time. Well, no, last time it might have been at the bottom. Sorry, mate, which is kill Marines, is at the very bottom with 14,839 completed out of 19,200. And the other one, which is kind of the interesting one, was forget to pay the toll, which is kill the driver of a moving enemy vehicle using a sniper rifle, which we have 402 out of 480. The only other level 4 one that we have, there's 2 of them, so we have 4 level 4s still. The one that's closest to being done is Road Trip. Just kill an enemy vehicle with a ground vehicle, enemy Spartan with a ground vehicle. We have 13,258 out of 14,400 remaining, our total for level 4. And then the Pain Train, kill an enemy Spartan with a shoulder bash. That one is also 4,094, strangely enough, but that is out of 4,800 instead of 4,900. That's interesting. We have 2 of them that are the exact same stat. Pretty ironic.
Friday, Halo 3, we were in the Halo 3 playlist. And what map was it on? Shoot. Map with the Spartan laser on top. You got the beach and the base. Can't think of the name of the map now.
Oh, High Ground.
High Ground, yes.
I don't know what the Halo map, 5 version of it is, but it's High Ground in Halo 3. Yeah.
That map is built for ground pounds.
That makes sense.
I could have gotten, we were playing that, and I was up there in that the tower where it's Spartan laser spawns. I could have gotten so many ground pounds.
The only thing with ground pounds, though, in the Halo 3 Classic playlist is you can't use ground pounds.
Exactly. I could have gotten so many ground pounds.
Gotcha.
I mean, they were just running all over the place, and I could have just boom,
boom, yeah, just boom. Just saying for everyone else, that might be a little confused, but there's
yeah.
Only if, but I mean, it'd be cool
yeah, to actually if I had been able customs. To do it.
Right. It'd be interesting to play those in customs, though, and see how the Spartan abilities would change the gameplay.
Oh, the ground pound would piss a lot of people off.
Well, yeah. That goes without saying.
But yeah, I was really missing my ground pound.
There's a few of those Spartan abilities like, okay, this makes sense. And there's a few other ones that are just like, wait, what? So it'll be interesting to see what they keep and what they toss in Halo 6.
Yeah, I was missing most of them while we were playing that. The ability to duck behind a wall when you're being shot by a needler is really annoying not to have. But overall, yes, it was a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, that's going to be it for us tonight. We do have a short little giveaway to do, which is kind of ironic because the 3 people that are in here right now are normally in here. So it's just going to be giveaway more stuff to the same people. So for those that listen to us, please join us on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern time when we record these. Oh, wait, there is another person. Big Nasty. Welcome to the stream. Welcome to the Twitch side of things. So we do have one person that's not normally here that we can actually get a possibility at winning. I thought I had an Atriox figure for the Halo Heroes, but I don't. So the next best thing, Decimus. So I'm going to be given that away here. So, and there's only Eric Ubu, Confel, Bobby, and Pins in the Mixer chat. And then there is Confel, Pins, Bobby, and Big Nasty, and Laird, sorry. And Big Nasty's in the Twitch chat. So we don't really have too many people. We have 6 people to give this away to. So I'm going to do a little random.org poll here. and see who we land on to get the figure. Let's see. 1, 2, 3. And there we go. So we got the 2. And that is going to be, let me check the list here. Number 2 is Confal. Congratulations. You won the Helihilaris Decimus. So I think I have your address from the last time I gave you something, so I'll just ship this out to that. That puts on Pins me, yeah. We need a meme for Pins Halo Mask. I thought, well, was there one out there somewhere?
I never saw it if there was one.
I thought someone did something like that. Yeah, a new shirt. That's actually not a bad idea. Pins says it doesn't work anymore. Oh, geez. There'll be plenty of other giveaway stuff. Thanks, everyone, for listening, though. You can check us out on all of our social media platforms. Just search Podtacular on whatever platform, and if we have it, you'll find us. So Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Mixer, YouTube, Instagram, Xbox Club, Sprite & Company, all that fun stuff. Again, just search Podtacular, and if we have it, you'll find it. Also, make sure you check out the Podcast Network. We're part of a group of gaming-specific shows such as CritzCast, Guardian Radio, The Learning Cliff, Podcast 76, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. You can find out more about the network over at thepodcast.com and check out those other shows as well. They're done by wonderful people with great personalities and great show quality. Highly recommend that you check them out. Make sure you check out the latest Achieving Halo episode, which was released tonight as of this recording. It is Alliance and Enemy Lines. So the first or the second hub mission, technically. And then Enemy Lines is the mission with the Kraken. So check that out over on our YouTube channel. And if you're interested in getting involved with the next one, then make sure you head on over and join our Xbox Club. Godzilla will post a looking for group in the club whenever the time comes up the week before to record for the next Achieving Halo, which I'm assuming will be probably within the next 3 or 4 weeks, depending on schedules for you.
Hopefully in the next 1 or 2 weeks, but I've got to figure out what my weekend schedule is going to be. So I will definitely put it up when once I get the, it will be a Saturday. It will be between 6 and 7 Eastern time. So
that's PM, just so you guys know. It's yes, not PM. AM in the morning.
Well, the early birds. Know. If I get more people, I might do it at 7 a.m.
Fair enough. Anyone over in Europe or Australia? Actually, Australia would probably benefit from you doing it later. Europe would benefit from you doing it earlier.
I would take any volunteers, and we can work out the schedule later.
So make sure you hook up with Godzilla T on Twitter or join up on the Spartan, or it's not Spartan Club, the Xbox Club. Look for the looking for group posts that he'll post and get involved with the Achieving Halo series. We are 4 videos away from being done, right? Yeah, 4 videos.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually 3 videos because there's one more hub mission and then we'll do a mission and then the last 2 levels. So 3 actual videos.
Right. Yes. Correct. Well, I thought Enemy Lines was mission number 10. And then you have the 11th hub, then the attack on Sinaion. And then I thought you had 3 other ones after that.
Well, let me pull up my list. Enemy Lines, you have the Storm, which is a hub mission, Sinaion, Genesis.
That's 1.
And then
that's
the Breaking.
3. Oh, so yeah, that's 3. Cool. 3 more videos. And then we're back to MCC to do Halo 2, 3, and whatever else. Or are you going to move on to Halo Wars and try to do an Achieving Halo for that?
Well, I don't think anybody would benefit from achieving Halo on Halo Wars because you play the game and you get the achievements, even on easy. Yeah. You know, the hardest part is just keeping up with all the sub-objectives. Completing all those can be challenging.
The bonus ones, yeah. So make sure you check that out on our Xbox Club. And then make sure you check this out on Fridays as well when Godzilla T hosts Fraggin' Fridays. which is our community play date. It is open to anything, Warzone, customs, multiplayer. I know there's been a lot of interest in doing the Halo 3 throwback, so we've been doing a little bit of that. And whenever we get into big parties, it'll either be big team, Warzone, and sometimes customs. I think, I don't know, how popular has customs been over the past few game nights?
Well, once we go over six people, then we have to go either big team or customs. So customs have been relatively popular after we get over six people.
Well, you can do eight people with Firefight, right?
Right. We can do eight people with Firefight, but as far as regular Warzone.
Gotcha. So yeah, Big Nasty, we're talking about the Halo 5 campaign for Achieving Halo. They're actually, I don't know when last you played Halo 5 campaign was, but they introduced new achievements for the campaign. So if you haven't looked at it since, and you said you beat a couple times soon after Halo 5 came out, so if you haven't played in a while, there's probably some new achievements if you're the achievement hunting type that you haven't seen yet, and you might want to go back and play.
Yeah, there's a bunch of score-based achievements that they released a few months ago.
Which I still got to do the par times and par scores for MCC. There's a lot of achievements on there.
Yeah.
A lot of achievements. But that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And thanks, everyone, for last week who tuned in to deal with all the technical issues that we had. I'm back up and running. Turns out, my Windows install no longer likes my audio card.
Nice.
Yeah, whenever I install the drivers, I can't boot. It just blue screens. And then I have to go into the safe mode, uninstall the drivers, and then it boots up just fine. So at some point in the not too distant future, I'm probably going to have to do a clean install of Windows to get the sound card working again. So for the time being, my headsets are my speakers. I have my speakers turned off because I can't use them. It is what it is. At least we're back in the working manner. And you'll see some changes to the live stream next week since it'll be 600. We're making some changes. I'm going to be putting out some special things as well. And we hope you guys will stick around to some of the stuff that we have going on. We're not doing anything big. It's just going to be a couple of new things, new experiences for the Podtacular podcast and the streams. But it's something that we hope you guys can tell your friends about it. And maybe if you don't listen to the show live, you can come try to make it a little bit more often, or tell your friends about the podcast and help get the word out. Next week we'll actually be changing because I have to work late on Tuesday. So next week it'll likely be on Thursday. Whenever we have a change in schedule, we usually let people know on Facebook and Twitter that we're making a change to the schedule. Normally Tuesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern time. That's 6 p.m. Pacific time, and that's either 1 or 2 a.m. UK time. But that'll wrap it up for us tonight. Thanks everyone for tuning in. We will see you all next week. Keep on fragging 4DS for releasing the Flood.